Tell me a little bit about yourself and the Ford family. Memphis and Tennessee politics.
Well, really, it's nothing to tell. You know, I'm Harold, and you know, I'm a candidate for the U.S. Congress.
And you have two brothers who are candidates for the state legislature,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, two brothers who just won in the Democratic primary. They don't have any opposition now in the Republican primary, another general election.
And you've been serving in the legislature?
I've served 4 years, right.
And were you opposed in the congressional campaign?
Yeah, I was opposed by five other Democrats. One was the first Catholic nun to seek office, congressional office, rather. She was one of my opponents, and we had one other lady and three other men in the Democratic primary. And one of the men was also a former member of the Tennessee House, like I've served in. He served 6 years in the Tennessee House, and I served four.
And you ended up with what percentage of the vote?
I don't know the exact total. I would imagine it was about 64, 65%, somewhere in that figure.
It was a clear majority. That's what, yeah. That's what I was. Can you tell me just more or less how the Black Caucus operated in the legislature?
Well, really we never organized a Black Caucus in the Tennessee House. I was elected 4 years ago, and I was very disturbed about not having a Black Caucus. And we could never really boil down the bylaws and all for a Black Caucus. So we really put one together, per se. But we'd always use the name Tennessee Black Caucus when there was problems that would come up with the Dunn administration, the Democratic leadership. We felt that something wasn't quite right, then we would all meet under the name of the Black Caucus.
So it was very informal.
Yeah,
sort of, structure.
Yeah, very informal. We didn't have an officer or chairman of the Black Caucus at all. And we found ourselves meeting about once every other week, you know, to talk about different pieces of legislation that would affect all Black people, and we felt that it was time that, you know, that we would all meet. We could not agree upon everything, but usually you would find every other week a piece of legislation or something going on within administration to go in and to meet as a Black caucus and take a firm position.
Well, because of the makeup of the Tennessee legislature, with particularly in the House, but both houses being so close and by party, 50-49 in the House and not that close in the Senate, but it put the Black caucus in being, I think what it was a unique position among Southern state legislators in holding a balance of power.
Well, it put us in that position in the 87th General Assembly more so than it did in the 88th, because in the 87th General Assembly, we had both the leadership of the majority party and the leadership of the minority party. Both was real frightened every time a major piece of legislation that would come up that they would be concerned about. They was afraid that, you know, that they would not be able to pull the Blacks of their sides to in order to pass a piece of legislation. And the Democrats was frightened because they didn't know whether they could hold the Blacks with them, because the Blacks really owed the Democratic Party nothing. Because for years and years they hadn't delivered. And, you know, we was put on the same fence with the Republicans. We couldn't trust the Republicans, nor the Democrats. So most of the times you had to play it by ear. But what had happened, in a few instances, you had a Black to maybe step out of line away from the Black caucus. But Seth Gein, and realizing that Seth Gein didn't work, you know, after the Democratic Party, a minority party, got exactly what they wanted, you know, we was all Black again. You know, wasn't anything that you turned me a favor. Then we finally realized that that we had to stick together on major issues, and also electing and selecting our constitutional officers. We realized that the only way that we could successfully do anything was to stick together on it. But in the 88th General Assembly, we still, you know, could recall those days of the 87th, and the majority party and minority party realized that, and they was able to convince. Democrats was able to sow deals with Republicans who was very strongly, you take in the last two sessions, East Tennessee Republicans was concerned about one thing, and that was establishing a second state-supported medical school in their state. And they was concerned about that, and that's it. They didn't care what happened. The $1.9 billion budget could have been spent in the black community. All they was concerned if you passed that medical school bill fund. And the Democratic Party was able to pull 7 to 9 Republican East Tennessee votes with them on every major vote, which killed the effect, which really killed the effect of the black caucus. It was completely wiped out. We had no more effect. But what had happened was the administration was so strongly opposed to the second medical school. And until the only thing that we could do, and I started off with the second medical school in support of it 3 years ago because I had a brother who's now at Columbia University, was denied admittance here at the University of Tennessee Medical School. And 4 years ago, as a freshman, the first year serving in the General Assembly, I was asked to support the second medical school. And my comments on the House floor that day to the speaker was that the University of Tennessee denied James Ford, who was my brother, that, you know, year before then, from being accepted to the University of Tennessee because of being overcrowded, then I felt we needed a second medical school. But if he was denied because he was black, then I think we still should have a second medical school that would admit black people into medicine, into the state of Tennessee. And I went on record in support of the bill. But at the same time, when we learned that the Democratic Party pulled these 7 solid votes on their major issues in return to give them X amount of votes that they needed, then we immediately withdrew our support from the medical school. Because then, you know, we had no effect. Not all blacks withdrew their support. We was able to get enough black support from the medical school. After I'd added all of the black support to the medical school, then we was able not to fight the medical school per se, but to pull back and let the Democratic Party know you still got to deal with us if you're going to make that deal with those Republicans over there. And, you know, they always try to find some kind of deal, you know, with it. But the governor's office fought the medical school and kept our chances in passing legislation. And I'll be just perfectly honest, I never had a piece of legislation before the General Assembly that I didn't pass. You know, I had some very unpopular bills at times, and some bills that people thought it was a joke introducing. But
what were some of these specifics? You're talking about bills that would help black people, right?
Bills that would, you know, would help everybody. I never introduced a black bill while I was there.
All right, the bills that would help everybody, but a particular interest is black community?
Well, a lot of times you would know that the black community has suffered greatly because of these bills not being passed.
What are some examples of
this
kind of
legislation? Well, the first bill I passed was a bill on Memphis Light Gas and Water here in Memphis, saying that Memphis Light Gas and Water could no longer charge 10% late charges on utilities because a person is one day late in paying the utility bill. We felt that the penalization for not paying the utility bill was a disconnecting of a bill, not penalizing poor people 10% more. In other words, they would assess a late charge after 10 days after receiving your utility bill on monthly, and it'll be 10% of the overall bill. And usually you'll find people paying anywhere from $1.50 to $6 a month on late charges 12 months out of a year. We felt that was, you know, unnecessary and uncalled for when Memphis Light Gas and Water was showing reports that the $1.5 million, a fraction over $1.5 million revenue being brought in every year, it wasn't helping the utility company at all. It was, you know, it wasn't doing anything. It was just sitting in a kitty alone. And we felt that, you know, those late charges could be removed because you had people who was on fixed income. You take people on welfare, receive a check on the 9th. Memphis Light Gas and Water had the billing cycle set. They knew the poverty-stricken areas where that those people would be receiving welfare assistance. You get it on the 9th, the last day to pay your net, just so happened to have been on the 8th. Same thing would be true with people who were on other fixed incomes like Social Security. They knew proportionally in billing cycles in this community where the majority of the people on Social Security live. Those people received that check on the 3rd. The last day to pay your utility bill on the net amount was on the 2nd of the month. these people being penalized with very good intentions, paying their bills on the 4th, but just was not able to meet the debt that date because they was on a fixed income and couldn't get the money until the 3rd, until the 9th, until the 1st of the month, whatever day that their checks were received in. And we extended the time in which to pay 5 more days, which carried everybody over that time and reduced the late charges by 5%, which saved the people of the city of Memphis $1 million a year. They reported $960,000 in revenue that was being missed from Memphis Light Gas and Water after the bill was passed. That was the first piece of legislation. And at that time, I hadn't been seated for 6 weeks, and we had passed the bill in both houses, and the governor had signed the bill. The other bills, some of the other bills that they worked on, the state minimum wage bill, it was the first time in the history of the state of Tennessee that we passed a minimum wage bill in the House. Although we were successful in passing the bill in the Senate, wasn't successful in passing the bill in the Senate because of the Senate sponsor, but we was able to pass it in the House without getting it all watered down. It took a lot of hard work, and about 5 months to get it passed after some study and all was made on it. But I was successful in working with other members of the General Assembly and as a prime sponsor of the bill and passed the bill. And I worked and passed the landlord-tenant bill. Tennessee was the 16th state to go on record, and I think about the second southern state, or maybe the first southern state to go on record and pass the landlord-tenant bill, where to do away with the slum rural property in an urban city like Memphis and rural counties also. We were successful in passing that. That bill wouldn't get directly to the black community, although you have a lot of ghetto apartments in the black community. And what you can see in the city of Memphis, now in the state of Tennessee, all over the state, you know, these landlords remodeling and fixing these rundown apartments up and bringing them up to standards now. During the time that I passed that bill, and we were successful in passing the housing rehabilitation bill that brought $55 million into the community. Whereas the people who was on fixed income, or low income, or moderate income, could not afford or could not make a loan through a bank to bring their home up to standard. In other words, we passed the bill and issued bonds for $55 million, whereas the state would guarantee low income loans at low interest rates through any bank in the state, and the state would guarantee the loan. And also, not a bill that I sponsored, but one of the co-sponsors, of the bill, the Tennessee Housing Development Agency bill, which took about a year to work on. After Nixon cut back the federal 235 low-income home, was able to go in and pick up the same type of program and implement that program here in the state of Tennessee. We have not put it into effect as of yet because it's in a court battle now. And it should be out of the courts by the first of the year, but we will pick up the same federal low-income home. On the housing problem, we think that was a great step for the state of Tennessee. And it wasn't by accident, in other words, it was at the goodness of white folks' hearts that they wanted these type of bills to pass and become law in the state. We was just able to work hard, not as a black caucus per se, but as a majority whip of the House and as a secretary of the Calendar and Rules Committee, to work hard, long hours, and make sure that we would be successful in getting these pieces of legislation passed. Now, there was a lot of county bills, a lot of city bills were sent to me after the good and feel the effect in passing the bill. They were sent there because they wanted certain pieces of legislation passed. Senior citizen deals, I guess, you know, 4 or 5 different pieces of it. That was very unpopular, but we were able to make it. Yeah. Out of 4 years serving in the House, and I think we implemented 11 strong pieces of legislation, whereas the Tennessee usually been the 45th and 48th state to put it on the books. You know, we was able to implement it this time with Tennessee being less than 25. So, you know, that's a great step for the state of Tennessee.
One of the things we were told was that the black caucus, at least in the informal sense of the word, worked successfully in the redistricting plan for the legislature to create what may, well, at least gives a potential for a black seat out of Hamilton County.
Well, that was true, but at the same time, blacks are about 18 or 19% of the state of Tennessee. You know, It was this simple. Either you draw a district in Hamilton County, or we're going to beat one of these white Democrats. And it was just that simple. And the same thing happened here in Shelby County. We said, either you draw another black seat in Shelby County, or we're going to beat one of these white Democrats. They didn't draw one in Shelby County, but we just beat the one we said we was going to beat. So, you know.
Which race was that?
Tommy Fowler, the big labor man. You know, we didn't ask to draw his seat. Shelby County is five blacks in the House. Shelby County should have eight blacks in the House because of the Democratic Party holding back and don't want to face up to
it. So Powell lost?
Yeah, Powell lost to a black. We defeated him in the primary. With those Dedrick Williams. So we picked up one in Hamilton County. But we haven't, you know, the Black Caucus can take credit for that. But we didn't gain anything by picking up one, you know, in the House. We should have picked up one in Hamilton County 4 years ago. You know, not in 1970. We're 4 years behind. And that was only after just telling them, either you draw one if we'll defeat the chairman of the Education Committee. You know, and that we all will just take off and go up there and make sure that we work all summer until we defeat him. And until he believed that we was going to defeat him, then they got around and got busy and drew on the Republicans out of there. You know, and put a black seat in there. So that happened. The Republican law, drew one of the Republicans out and all the Democrats got reelected again. And what should have happened was in Knox County, and that's what we tried to make the move on. To pick up a seat. We had a seat in Knox County, and the black that was holding the seat didn't run, and the white picked the seat up because the district was only about 40 to 44% black.
So was that district changed at all?
In Knox County. We should have picked up one state senate seat here and two house seats black at least this term. We didn't pick up the Senate seat. I don't know. I was busy in the congressional race. Had it not, we would have got the Senate seat that one of the white that ran for re-election won. We could have very easily picked it up.
Which one was that?
Keith Tallarica. He's in just by accident, not by choice.
One of the impressions we've gained is that as a result of the sanitation strike in Memphis, that had the effect of mobilizing black labor, organized black labor, politically, probably as much or more than any place in the South.
I don't know.
How effective is organized black labor politically?
Well, I would think it's very effective. I don't know. I would get an impression they were just as strong in 1916 as they are right now. And I think they're very strong. I respect them a great deal. And I think they're very powerful in this city. And I'll tell you what, I need not to be their friend.
What? How old are you now?
29.
Why did you decide to run for Congress this year?
Oh, I decided 2 years ago to run. I withdrew to run back for re-election. What happened was 2 years ago I decided to run with Joe Patterson, the one my brother defeated this time, but the Senate seat. I jumped in the race and he wouldn't withdraw. Then we'd added two new seats. I felt it was necessary that we step back out of it. And we went and got us a college student to run for a state house seat. And we put him in a race to just test our strength, see what we'd be ready for 2 years from now, which was in 1974. And we never showed the candidate until after the election. And John and I, we just, we was both campaign managers, and she never spoke in the place. She won 73% of the vote. With five other, opponents, two is very strong. And we got it in 1974.
We've heard a lot about the factionalism within the black community in Shelby County. Are all those various factions unified behind your candidacy?
I don't know. Picking up 97% of the vote, you wouldn't care. Yeah, I don't think organizations or groups can mean a thing to the vote anymore. I think it all depends upon the candidate himself or herself. We've never had an organization. Been a single organization endorsed my brother in his last election. they was forced to endorse me, although they didn't want to. They was endorsing me to carry the balance of their ticket, though. I didn't object. They all used my pictures, you know, carrying, you know, the front of the balance. But neither one of them endorsed my brother.
Am I correct you're involved in a lawsuit now involving the makeup of this congressional district?
Right.
What's the status of that?
I'm not involved in it myself.
Okay. There's a lawsuit involved.
There's a lawsuit I'm familiar with. But some of the people that work with us in this campaign has filed.
Is that likely to be resolved before the election, before November?
We would hope so. I certainly would hope so. Not only that, we've heard from the House Administration Committee in Congress, even if Kirkland Oil defeat us with a margin of votes that he received from those seven precincts, the counselors for the House Administration Committee said by law he could not be seated in that way. So, you know.
Why? I mean, what is...
Because of the seven precincts that was added into this district that are unconstitutional, denying the rights of a black to be seated in the halls of Congress from a black district. They're having a press conference in Washington on Wednesday, gotcha, and they're going to, Peter Robina is going to hit the press conference and state it very clearly that Kirkland Oil will not be seated if he's elected, only if the vote is determined by those votes in those seven precincts. There's no way. I don't think Kirkland Oil can defeat us at all. And I don't think there's no way, if some just happened to us, then he would defeat us, that he could beat us no more than 5,000 votes. In the last election, 15,000 people voted in it, in those seven precincts. Those are his heaviest precincts. In the primary, he got a little over 20,000 votes, and he got 10,000 votes out of those seven precincts.
Those seven precincts have been added since the last election?
No, they were added right before Patterson's election. See, we, the General Assembly, the legislature, never put those precincts in the district. Our election commission here put them in there.
Oh.
Our Republican-controlled election commission. We got that letter showing from the Shirley Haslam, the state coordinator of elections. Wrote the chairman of the election commission and said, look, those votes cannot be counted in the 8th congressional district by law. They're not in there. And we will not, you know, count them in the state official votes. They won't even recognize them on the state election commission. But they, you know, they put them over here themselves. See, the congressional bill said, and all other precincts shall be placed in the 8th congressional district. And in the 6th and the 7th, which border Shelby County, they named precincts by number. When they got to the 8th, they said, and all others shall be placed. So what happened, they went to the 6th district and got some precincts and divided them. Said they were overpopulated and created new precincts. So that means those new precincts were never named in the 6th congressional district, so they just automatically placed them in the 8th.
No, did it create population beyond the variance?
Yeah.
Who's the lawyer handling that case?
Attorney Eric Lincoln, who is my finance chairman. Attorney Joel Kaplan. Attorney Turkerton. Now, you know, Texas case had a 2.66 variance in the congressional populations. This is 9.7 variance. In other words, our congressional line is supposed to have been 0.5% from 491,000 in population. This congressional district, the 8th congressional district, is not a one man, one vote anymore.
So is it your contention, and I presume it is, but I want to ask, that this was done deliberately to try and prevent a black from being elected to Congress?
Well, there's no doubt about it. It's clear cut. I mean, it's no, you know, it's no.
Beyond that, what's the major issue in the congressional race?
That's not an issue in the congressional race at
okay.
all.
What is the major issue in the congressional
race? The major issue is domestic policy and inflation. You know, Kirkland Oil has been the type of guy that has dealt directly with Nixon on foreign matters. He's more concerned about the Middle East instead of Middle East Memphis. You know, he's concerned about everything except right here at home. And I think now is the time that people will realize that they want a voice for them and not a voice that will constantly represent the big corporations and large industry.
Is his vote against the impeachment inquiry an issue?
Is his vote against?
Aren't I correct that he was one of four congressmen who voted against even holding an impeachment
right.
inquiry? Is that an issue in the campaign?
Well, that will be an issue at a certain point. It will not start off being an issue. We're going to deal with economics first. And I think what will happen when you bring the race issue up, black-white issue, then, you know, we will use things on Kirkendall with the Richard Nixon, you know, showing the dishonesty and tying the Richard Nixons and the Spiro Agnews and the Dan Kirkendalls together, which all of them have been very, very close friends.
How do you campaign in the white community?
How do we campaign in the white community? Do the same way in black. We've never campaigned in the white community. It's our first shot. Except two precincts in the primary, and we carried those.
How about in so far as campaign staff? I just noticed that there, I didn't see any white faces out there.
We haven't started a campaign yet. So everybody, you know, just still around. Campaign staff, we, full-time staff, we got two white lawyers, full-time staff, they're in Washington now, you know, getting some congressional reports. We have a press secretary is white. We have two of our, my personal secretary is white. And that's because I used her in Nashville. She's very good. And she's got an assistant that's white. We got two campaign coordinators that are white. I guess out of 32 paid staff people, half of them are white, half of them are black. Volunteers, majority of them are white. Majority of them. So we got a Memphis state office. You know, it's 500 whites in there, but today, you know, working.
What's your major source of campaign funds? You know, 32 staff sounds pretty good size.
We spent $79,000 in the primary. I would imagine that we, I don't have the figures in my face right now, you know. We raise anywhere from, I think we raise approximately $30,000 to $40,000 from churches, black churches in the city. We raise approximately $30,000 from the black community, just from $1 to $20 in contributions coming in. We had a mass milling of, you know, contributions coming in constantly. We carried the campaign directly, you know, to the black community and asked them to put the money up and finance their candidate for a congressional race. And that was about it. We raised a good 85% of our money for the first time totally from the black community. And we raised campaign contributions, you know, from the white community.
How about organized labor? Do you get support from them?
I guess we will get it now in the general. We didn't have it in the primary. We had only one fashion of the labor organization with us, and that was the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, who endorsed us, but did not support us financially in the primary.
What sort of support is Ray Blanton going to get in the black community in Shelby County? What sort of support will he get in the governor's race?
Y'all interrupting my conversation over here next door. All right, in the office, are you? I think Ray Blanton will pick the black vote up. I think he'll carry the black community. I'm sure he will throughout the state of Tennessee. I don't see any reason that Ray Blanton would not carry the total black community.
Why would he carry it?
I mean, why wouldn't he?
Well, he 2 years ago, he got about 60%, which was relatively low for a Democratic nominee for statewide office.
Well, number one, it was a different race. He was running for U.S. Senate. And this is 1974. He's running for the governor of the state of Tennessee. 1972, Agnew and Richard Nixon was at the top of the peak. And, you know, I don't see any reasons why they, you know, Baker had to defeat him, you know. Could no one beat the Republicans in 1970?
No, my point is that Baker got too substantial black support. Was that because, how much of it was Annie Blanton, how much was pro-Baker?
I think every vote that Baker picked up, the person voted because he wanted to vote for Howard Baker. And he didn't pick up about 30%.
Lamar Alexander heavy? any of that same
type of deal? I mean, Lamar Alexander is nowhere on Howard Baker. You know, there's no way that you can compare the two. You know, a Lamar Alexander and Howard Baker, there's no comparison. You know, and the way I see it at this time, that Lamar Alexander has nothing to offer people in the state of Tennessee.
Do you think that there'll be an apathetic black vote in the governor's race?
No.
Has Blanton done anything to strengthen his appeal in the black community?
Lamar Alexander hadn't done anything either to strengthen him at all in the black community. I don't see anything at all that Lamar Alexander done to strengthen him. Nobody even knowing.
Is the election commission being Republican controlled in Shelby County an issue at all as far as support for Blanton is concerned?
No, I don't know. It's not an issue number one because it's been this way all the time. If the Democrats can carry Shelby County, the Democrats will have control of the election commission. It's just that simple. The Democrats had control of it for 50 years. They want control of it again, they'll vote and carry Shelby County Democratic in 1974.
Was this gerrymandering of the congressional district, is that at least an underlying issue that carries over in the governor's race?
I don't think they want to deal with it.
Do you see any potential at all of a black elected officials association developing in Tennessee?
Black Elected Official Association.
I don't quite get,
said it again.
I said, do you
black
see
any? Political Association.
An association of black elected officials.
I mean, that's been organized already, you know.
There's no state level organization, is there?
We got a national level, and everybody participate in. I don't see any type of organization like that coming in the day. Too many black elected officials, talking about getting an association involved. I mean, we can communicate together, and not as a black politician or a white politician, you know, as an elected official, period. That I can call one of the members of the Senate or one of the members of the House. I don't have to, go through a black-white thing. We just talked to Colfax and a piece of legislation, and that's it.
When you campaign among whites in this congressional race, and you say you'll be going door to door, will you, that usually be accompanied by someone on the staff who's familiar with the neighborhood, or a volunteer worker?
Yeah, usually when we go volunteer, when we go door to door, we don't usually go with one or two. We usually carry 30 to 40 into a precinct and work it down, door to door. Say you start in the afternoon. Well, during the summer months, you can start in the afternoon at 4 o'clock and work the team. And you got a solid 6 hours. You can always pick your top volunteers. You can pick your top people in the community that would know everyone. You know, a lot of times they're just as effective as I am. Now, I don't have to knock every door in that moving precinct.
What's your basic message, particularly when you're going into a white area that is not familiar with you, that has not been in your house district?
Well, a lot of times, usually it's very brief and it's very short. You know, if it's a lady that, answers the door, ma'am, I'm Harold Ford, a candidate for Congress, and would just like to be your congressman from the 8th Congressional District. Just want to stop by personally and shake her hand, or to see someone else, shake their hands and ask them personally for their support and their vote on November 5th, August 1st, but that's it. Then they will, their reaction will depend on my next reaction. You can tell with the expression, the pleasant, accepting you, just brushing you off right quick. And you can usually judge, the ones that will accept you. only one that'll vote for you, all of them will probably say, yeah, okay. But that's no, you can't tell by yeah, okay. But you can tell by the expression, you can tell the reaction of the husband that's sitting in the living room, or someone else is sitting in. You can pick the reaction up immediately. You can tell whether, you know, if you've made a friend. And so many people are shocked by coming by. The white community's never had door-to-door type campaign. We experienced this in this primary. Matter of fact, I was knocking door-to-door in the primary when I got off the plane coming from New York the other day. And a white gentleman walked up and said, Harold Ford, I just want to shake your hand and let you know I voted for you. He said, you don't recall that you was at my home and, you know, asked my wife and I to vote for you. And I looked at him, I said, no, I certainly don't. He said, we didn't forget you. And we're not going to forget you in November. I said, we've been Republicans all our lives, but you're the first candidate to come by and knock on the door and ask him for a vote. I still didn't recognize him, you know, and I was a little embarrassed by not recognizing, you can't recognize everybody. So I think, you know, we're going to carry that door-to-door type campaign. We're not looking for all the vote. All we want is 10% of it. And we're going to shoot for a little more. We'll be satisfied with 10%.
Do you usually leave campaign literature on those type, that type campaign?
Oh, yeah. I don't use the hell of literature because I'm so busy shaking hands, you know. You got one of your staff people, one of the volunteers that are with you, you know, then they will give them the brochures and all. Also, we'll ask them, can we put a bump sticker on your car? Can we put a, you know, display a poster in your yard? You know, we'll find something to put on. You know, some kind of way.
What's the main difference? What sort of reaction do you get in the white community that you don't get in the black community?
Well, number one, it'll be a little hard to say, because I can go in the black community and every door, no man. Not half the doors, all the doors, but know me personally when I knock on the door. And I don't have to introduce myself, number one. I don't have to tell them about Harold Ford. They already know the work my brother and I have been doing already. We ain't got to go through no thing and convince them what we'll do for the community. They know, you know. It's just a mere fact. A lot of people just going back for what you got us, get somebody else, you know. And you walk, sometimes you walk a whole street, people just catch you coming. No, going back for what you got us, get somebody else. Just put some signs out there and keep on going. You know, that type of thing. You know, we've knocked so many doors in the black community. We've just, you know, people just tired of, you know, not maybe tired of seeing you, just you know, you can count on the vote, but we don't ever take it for granted. We just waved, we didn't want to take it for granted now, you know, something like that. Want to make sure.
Does your organization work on voter registration specifically?
Yeah, that's what we already 5 days behind. We were supposed to start it last week.
You have the whole district, particularly the black precincts, organized to the extent that there's a...
Well, no, what we're going to do, see, what we're doing, we are organizing some precincts that are heavy, that was all white, that has been, you know, blacks have taken complete control of the precinct. What I mean, you know, whites moving out and blacks moving in. And we got about seven of them. And blacks have not changed their voters' registration. No, they're registered now. They've been purged from the election commission's role. And what we're doing, we can get that 8 precincts. We can pick up enough votes to make this district 55% black.
Are you doing that mostly with volunteer workers?
Yeah, that's what we're going to, you know, we're going to start probably Wednesday. It'll take $25,000 to do it, though. You just can't go out there and do it. You got to have, you know, like we got an office being open to set up just to handle that, so it won't conflict with our congressional office. And just one thing, you got to have so many volunteers. You just be surprised at the volunteers that we have. And then when people, you know, work all summer like the kids are here now, they just love it, so they just come back to sit down. What can you say? And here's people that work. All your staff, you know, all. You know, the day was that first day to report back, and I told them this morning they could go home because we wasn't ready. So the only thing that I'm saying is, when you got people on your staff, you're not, you can't pay them full-time salaries, but when they're working 20, 21, 22, sometime all night, all day, you know, straight through, you know, they need a break. Now, we'd say that everybody got 2 weeks break. Everybody except me, you know, I continue that campaign going. And all I do all day now is just contact the conservative element of the Democratic Party and trying to heal all wounds with certain blacks that we've made during the primary and see can we heal the wounds and get back together. And so far, we've healed all wounds, look like. Now, all we got to do is just, you know, continue for a little while longer.
then we'll be all right. If we can maintain a solid 98% of the black vote, and if we maintain a solid 98% of the black vote, and at the same time pick up John Jay Hooker in 1970 running for governor, picked up 78% of the black vote. If we can get 78% of the black vote out to the polls to vote on November 5th, we don't need no white votes at all. And that's pulling 96% to 98% of the black vote. That's not a hard job to pull 90% to 96% of the black vote. 96% to 98%, that's not hard at all. The hard part, if it's organized properly, we can get 98%. And that's with no registration right now. I mean, that's as a district stands today. Now, if we're successful in getting these registered and make the district 50-50, and, all we need is a 65% and pick up 94% of the blacks that vote, which would be very easy to do.
So what you've got to do is get the blacks who are registered to the polls to vote.
Right.
That's what Which is do. Easier in Memphis than in most parts of the South, because there's a much more tradition of voting.
Right, and then plus the fact blacks have always outvoted whites in Shelby County, in this 8th congressional district. Except in 1972 was the first time the whites outvoted blacks. Blacks have always, percentage-wise, outvoted whites. In which I think they'll do it again, in 1974.
If you get elected to Congress, what is that going to mean for Tennessee politics?
I think it'll be a complete change in Memphis politics. I think Tennessee politics will realize that there must be some changes made in there. I think what happened on August 1st was a clear indication that the black community can no longer be overlooked, can no longer be taken for granted. They must be dealt with respect and realize that black people got sent. And that they know now the answer for survival is at the ballot box. And I don't think there's no way that no one can sell this black community not going out and electing here on 4th. I mean, the momentum, surprised me. Just going back to the churches and just going out in the streets. I can go to the streets right now, the momentum that you will see. People running out to their yards, talking about what they got to do before November 5th. We've got to do everything we can to put you in that seat. You know what I mean? So, I think the momentum that we've built up, black people ready. They ready to make that change. I think being elected to the congressional seat will name a black mayor to the city of Memphis in 1975. I think white people are afraid of that. Certain white political leaders, that's what they are frightened about. Because when we get elected on November 5th, we'll name the mayor in 1975, a year later. We'll have to name him. I don't think it'd be the same thing happens on that.
Would it be and Fred Davis or not?
Oh, shit, no. I mean, no. I'll be honest with you, no.
Could it be someone now on council or someone?
Oh, I don't know. We haven't even thought in terms of who it might be. We certainly, and our other thing is that...
Is he supporting you, by the way?
Who, Fred Davis?
Yeah.
I would doubt if he could support one of my opponents. But I doubt if he'd support me at this time. Why now, I don't know. But I think... No, you go ahead, I'm not. Cut that out.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. No,
go ahead. The, yeah. What do you think of the major need facing state government in Tennessee?
The major need for them to turn their ears toward program and turn their ears toward legislation that is needed for the people. And stop taking that $1.9 billion budget that we're confronted with in the state of Tennessee and carrying that budget and leading it in one direction only. And Tennessee is faced with a lot of problems. One thing, Tennessee is a big country state. We got a lot of farmers in the state of Tennessee. Same time, we got four urban cities that are constantly growing. They cannot fully complete its growth with people in the state administration like Winfield Dunn, who is concerned only about conserving those voters who were very conservative that voted for him to elect him.
How do you assess Winfield Dunn as governor?
Just a very conservative dumb. That's my assessment.
He views himself as being very progressive.
I think he's used the same type of Richard Nixon tricks. Feel that Tennessee, you know, belongs to him and no one else. He runs this state. This is his state. He can do what he want to do. And he's above the law.
What has been his strong and his weak points insofar as the overall black community in Tennessee is concerned?
I don't think he has any strong points. I don't know of one thing that Winfield Dunn has talked about to try to implement for the black community. I don't know of anything that he's tried to do to stop his administration from always cutting out blacks out of the administration in every phase of government. He's tried to stop every program. He's tried to make sure, and he's made sure that the revenue sharing funds the state of Tennessee has received, not a nickel of that money would be drifted into the black community. He made sure of those things. He never named a black within an administration until the last few months. He never let a black play in a leadership role within his administration. I know no black participation that he's had out of the 4 years he served in office. I don't know of anything, you know, at all that Winfield Dunn made it clear when he was elected that blacks didn't vote for him. And he owed the black community nothing. Those are the statements he made in his inaugural speech. And, you know, it's been very clear since that time. You know. So, and this is why I don't think, and I don't believe that black people are going to get, you know, sucked in with Lamar Alexander.
Did Dunn ever meet specifically with the black legislators?
Only when he wanted something. Only when he wanted to con us into something. He never did meet with them. I wouldn't meet with him. I stopped meeting with him after, you know, the first one or two meetings after we realized that all he was after was something for himself and for him to look good.
And those one or two early meetings, did he ever, you know, ask for input?
No.
Did he ever ask about problems facing black people?
No.